Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to a Friday, April 22nd, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Jam-packed show for you guys today. Yeah, we've got Go Big Orange Friday. It's back. Yes. Go Big Orange Friday. Tennessee Volunteers, baseball, football, basketball, Kennedy Chandler, the transfer of Brandon Huntley Hatfield, what Tennessee's going to do in the portal, Heupel talking about Ole Miss, Kiffin and Saban talking about Tennessee, NIL, the addition of Caleb Herring, Tony Botello's suspension, all that and more with Ryan Shumpert and Ethan Stone. Plus, oh yeah, college basketball, Jay Wright with a crazy surprise retirement this week, Amani Bates in the transfer portal from Memphis, all kinds of great college basketball stuff that we have to hit on here on this edition of the podcast. So that's coming up in just 1 second. Folks, I also wrote two pieces yesterday that you can go check out at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Sports Renaissance Man, that's me. Writing there all the time now, all kinds of great sports writing if you are into reading my work. So if you would like to read my work, if you are a fan of the podcast and vice versa, that would be great. Wrote about Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban and their thoughts on NIL. And then I did the what if game when it comes to Kennedy Chandler in wake of Oscar Tshiebwe electing to return to Kentucky and the UNC team getting back together for one more run this fall. So two pieces there that you can go check out for paid subscribers at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. So go ahead and check that out today if you are so inclined. You can also watch us on YouTube. Oh yeah, the Chase Thomas Podcast here on the Blue Wire Pod Network is on YouTube. YouTube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast, that simple. If you are already subscribed to this very podcast and you're a long-term listener of the show, you love the show, but you have not already done so, go ahead and hit that pause button and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get your podcasts. I say it every episode, but it really does help, and it helps other people find the show, and it helps this show continue to grow. So if you can do that, that would be great. Follow me on Twitter at @Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by good friend, Mr. Stats by Will. Will Warren, who is outside a big time landmark in Knoxville, Tennessee, the Methodist Church downtown. Stats by Will, how are you, sir?
Doing well. I'm in a parking lot all alone. Definitely feel really good about this. No, doing pretty well, man. Running a lot, enjoying the weather. It's been nice outside. Mm. No longer 34 degrees when I wake up to run. So
yeah, but you don't want that.
I don't want it too hot, but like tomorrow when I go run, or whenever people hear this, it'll be Friday. It's going to be 52 at sunrise. That's pretty solid. 52 is good. Anything from like 40 to about 55 is about the perfect range. Go above 55, it gets a little sketchy humidity wise.
Well, you got the haircut in. I noticed that you're freshly cut. You got that going for you. There you go. Like,
Thank you.
Not doing the sunglasses. I wanted the Twitter angry avatar for this.
I'll put them on for whenever I have a really hot take.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I have a take about NIL and college sports, I'll put them on.
Mm. There you go. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Well, there. It's kind of funny. Like, this was just a really strange week in college basketball because, out of nowhere, like, you have. There's two different types of coaches. The Coach K's of the world that are like, we're going to drag this thing out. We're going to do a whole year celebrating my retirement, and we're going to do that. And then the other side was Jay Wright was like, I'm good. Like, I'm 60 now, which I did not realize that Jay Wright was 60. Yeah. I hope I look somewhere close to that at 60 years old. The dude, he's obviously known for his suits and his calm demeanor, especially after winning the national title and his reaction to that shot. But, like, it's kind of amazing where I was like, how, like, what is it? And then you look at it and you're like, well, I mean, he's been doing this a long, long time and he has nothing to prove. He's got his championship. He just is an all-time winner. If he's not going to the NBA, and that was rumored for years, like, he got that interest. He runs a style of offense that seems like it could be conducive to an NBA team, but didn't really show interest, didn't do it, and stayed at Villanova. And he's like, all right, I'm just going to go off into the sunset. Bye. And then they just immediately replaced him with the Hofstra coach. But Fordham, excuse me. Wait, was it Hofstra or Fordham? Came from Hofstra.
I think Jay Wright's a Hofstra guy.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, so he came from Hofstra, and the new coach is from Fordham. Do I have that right? Am I misremembering that? Am I just blending them all together?
So, yeah, that I know the new guy is from Fordham, Kyle Neptune, because he was there for 1 year. But I know he's an understudy of some sort.
There you go. Well, Will, what do you make of Jay Wright's retirement?
I mean, it's pretty surprising. I wouldn't say... So, frankly, of the early retirements that I'm able to remember in recent years, I was a little more surprised when another college sports reference, but Chris Peterson stepped down at Washington. I was a little more shocked by that. This, at least, like, when I saw that Jay Wright was 60, I was like, well, okay, I get it. He has been at Villanova for a long time. He's accomplished everything you can really dream of accomplishing. Two national titles, multiple Final Fours to go with that. Really reframed what basketball was there. I understand, you know, they had the 1985 title, but Villanova basketball would not be what it is today without Jay Wright, just, you know, straight up. He completely changed what they could be and will be for a long time. I mean, I can't claim to know a ton about Neptune because we have all of 1 year of data on him, but I think that, you know, as a continuity hire of sorts, that should be fine. There's like two real shocking things about it to me. One, obviously, is that Jay Wright is 60. I would have guessed 54. I think 54 would have been fair because think about it this way. Jay Wright is just 7 years younger than Rick Barnes.
That is wild.
And Rick Barnes is not looking 54 these days. No offense to Rick Barnes.
How dare you?
Rick Barnes is looking a spry 67 or whatever. but no, I think it's that and that it happened this quietly, which I greatly respect. I have sort of made it clear I did not care for the Coach K retirement extravaganza. Not going to say what I want to say, fest. But I think the way that Wright handled it in particular, it's actually even quieter to me than Roy's retirement in a way, because Roy did have like a whole press conference. I'm sure Wright will do the same. But Roy kind of had his whole little spectacle and named his own hire after. I will say as a side note, a month ago, pre-NCAA tournament, somebody I know who's in the hashtag sources world offhandedly made a comment that they heard Wright was considering retirement. And I said, okay, very funny. You're wrong. I mean, I didn't think, I thought he was like, yeah, I don't have anything to go off of, but this is what I'm hearing. And I said, okay, great. That won't, I mean, people hear stuff all the time that doesn't end up being true. So, and for this to just drop out of nowhere on a Wednesday night was crazy. I don't know if he was waiting for a certain date or if there was something like that. Maybe it's like they had to wrap up the Neptune contract first before he could say yes. But whatever it was, crazy thing to happen. I think the college basketball game, I know this has been said by every blue check on Twitter, the college basketball game really is going to miss Jay Wright because his offenses were so beautiful to watch. His teams played a style of basketball that was just very conducive to even to people who aren't huge college basketball fans, I think. And a really cool thing about Jay Wright is that, you know, early in the career at Villanova, and really even after 2009 when they broke through and made the Final Four, up to that run where they won the title, a lot of people said, you know, Jay Wright can't win in March. Jay Wright's teams always go out early. And they had that history of going out early as 1 and 2 seeds. But all it took was, you know, two runs, really, 2015-16, 2017-18, and to a lesser extent this year, to completely reframe even how we thought about that with him. I mean, you know, if they only win one national title or zero, maybe he's not discussed in the same way. But it just goes to show you, like, you take enough cracks at it, like Jay did. If you're consistently good enough as a 1 and 2 and 3 seed like he was, you're just going to break through eventually. That's all it is. You just got to keep swinging away. Sometimes
you're
really
an offensively friendly scheme. The defense clunkiness, and you hope that will result in a title. It's more of just his scheme and his offense was like, eventually it was all going to come together.
It was just all like, don't have a bad shooting night at the wrong time.
And so, eventually after 20 years, that was going to happen. And then shooting obviously was the reason they won a national title with a crazy buzzer beater there to follow a crazy almost buzzer beater with North Carolina. Some rough endings to North Carolina in their big games as of late.
They've won their whole share of titles.
You were not so angry about North Carolina's advancement in
I was annoying. It was not enjoyable.
You hate fun. It was so much fun.
Because I'm
nice.
A fan of a 3 seed that should have gone further.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, for sure. But they were fun.
Anyway. Yeah, the Caleb Love thing was actually really cool. I did enjoy watching him play a lot.
More than Babcock? I mean, that dude, just 20 boards and just what I don't know. He was just unreal.
The Baycott thing to me I like, of course, but yeah. Caleb Love's style is more conducive to my personal, you know, interest in basketball.
That's fair. Well, speaking of big guys who are not conducive to the style of basketball that you
big
like.
Big boys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oscar Tshiebwe is coming back to Kentucky. $2 million NIL deal, bringing him back to Lexington. I wrote about this actually today with Kennedy Chandler, where it's like when you dive into the contract, it's like, oh, Keon got around $2 million last year at the 21 slot. He made a draft. After next year, he has a club option. He's already been moved once, and it's like, oh, this could be it. It's just like an extra year and $2 million, and he could be out of the league. Like Keon could very much, Jaden Springer obviously went after him. He departed as well. Kennedy Chandler signs with an agent, and he's gone. But I wrote about it where it's like, it's hard for me to believe that Tennessee could not come up with around $2 million to bring back Chandler. But it's also like, if he wants to go pro, there's nothing you can do. You can keep throwing money at him, but if he's ready to move on, the point is moot. But I would love to know for sure if that would have swayed him at all because of what we saw in his lasting memory, just being him being embraced by Juwan Howard and just that tough moment where he really, really loved this team. And you could tell it meant a lot to him. And he wanted to make the Final Four and go further than he did. But the same was true with Oscar. He was overcome with emotion after that historic upset to St. Peter's. Where, remember when he was walking back to the locker room, he was in rough shape after that kind of loss. And obviously the situations are different because Oscar is going to be a late second round guy and Kennedy's going to go somewhere just outside the lottery. So the money's different and the guaranteed contracts, all that kind of stuff's different. So I understand all that. But it is a big get for Kentucky to be able to bring him back and have that continuity and to be able to say, hey, like Oscar's back, so Kentucky's going to be fine. And there, and Kentucky fans who are like, who just love Oscar Tshiebwe, especially the person, they get to enjoy another year of Oscar and him just dominating the way he does, which is a very different style than what we see a lot of the time. So I was just jealous. And that was kind of where I'm coming from, where I'm like, man, seeing UNC run it back with their five, seeing Oscar come back to Kentucky, and then Tennessee losing Hatfield and losing Kennedy Chandler in the same offseason, Folky graduating, you're like, this team's going to look completely different. It's impossible to forecast what Tennessee's going to look like next year at this point in time. Especially Murray not ending up in Knoxville and he goes to Georgetown instead. And anytime you have an opportunity to join up with a team that, did they win a conference game this year?
They either won 0 or 1. Yeah. I can't remember.
But anytime you have that opportunity, you go for it every single time. But I don't know. I think it's a big win for Kentucky. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, I think the Tennessee and Kentucky situations are completely different in that if you're going, I mean, Kennedy is going to go, we'll say 21st on average, something like that. If you're going 21st, it's a guaranteed 3-year deal.
Right.
If you're going 54th, like Shibwe probably would have, that's not guaranteed money. That's like, you might get a 2-way deal or something. And the difference is, you know, Shibwe's game is just a lot more built for college than it is for the NBA. You're not going to have guys who are, you know, can't really, I mean, he cannot shoot an outside shot. Yeah. That's not really going to fly anymore. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, would you draft Isaiah Stewart in the top 20 again if you could?
No.
So, but the point is, like, it's great that Shibwe is coming back. And again, great for college basketball because two things. One, I think anytime your national player of the year returns, it's a net positive for your product. And, you know, Kentucky's going to be able to sell a lot of Shibwe shirts and tickets and all sorts of cool apparel. So that's exciting. I think that's great for the school and for Oscar because, frankly, I mean, on your average, I think of it like, and this is a stats brain thing, but think of it like playing probabilities. Your average Shibwe NBA outcome is going to end with him getting less than $2 million a year.
Mm.
He's going to get $2 million a year to play college basketball and beat up on guys. That's great. Mm. The second thing is maybe this can force everybody to finally pronounce Shibwe correctly. It's not hard. I was just listening to a show, and I'm not going to name the show because I love the people that do it, who pronounced it Toshibwe. That's not Toshib. It doesn't say T-A Shibwe in there. It's not T apostrophe Shib. It's just Shibwe. Oscar Shibwe.
Well, hold on. You have trouble, can you do Nico?
That...
All right. Can you do Nico? No? It's Nico Ia Maliava. The thing about Nico is you cannot say it fast. There's never going to be a time you can say it fast because you will stumble. There's no way.
I figured everybody was just calling that guy Nico.
I mean, you are going to call him Nico, but at some point, if you're still talking...
Or whatever his number will be.
Exactly.
But or if you have trouble with Shibwe, which, God, why would you? It's a two-syllable name.
Mm.
Just call him Big O, like Jimmy Dykes does. It's okay. Yeah. Don't say Toshibwe. That just drove me crazy. Because that wasn't the first, second, third, or even fourth time I've heard it pronounced like that in the last 2 months.
Mm.
It's nuts. I mean, if you're the National Player of the Year, the least somebody can do is pronounce your name correctly.
There you go. Well, Kofi, this is another name that I'm never going to pronounce correctly.
Because the justified pronunciation of that name is not allowed on this podcast.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm always nervous about pronouncing his name because, like, if you read it, like, I'm not going to lie, when I read it in my head, if I'm reading a piece on him, it's a completely different sound when I read it out loud. It's
Kofi
a
C. Kofi yeah. C.
Well, he's out. It looks like he's headed to the draft. That's kind of expected when you're reading the reports in and out. But what does Illinois look like without him? Because they really just – the identity has been him and then figuring it out around him with Brad Underwood the last couple of years.
Different, but I think there's a path to making it still work as well. Kofi, obviously, very impactful, very good college basketball player.
Mm.
I have to be honest in that, similar to Shibwe, and probably, honestly, more extreme than Shibwe, because I at least saw Oscar hit a few free throw line jumpers this year. More than probably any of those types in college basketball, Kofi Coburn is just big, right?
Mm.
So he's like, he doesn't really have like an array of post moves. It's just like, he's just built like a freaking behemoth.
Yeah.
And which is great in college. That's going to work against most teams. So I don't know about NBA for him, but the Illinois specific impact, they did delete disaster factory Andre Curbelo from their roster, who depending on the night can be both Illinois' best player and the opposition's. So I don't know what they're going to look like when it's like, so Frasier, I assume, is back. And he would be my first candidate to run the show. I don't know. I'm still waiting, and I think Illinois will break through eventually. It's the same Villanova principle where if you're consistently top 15 or whatever, you will eventually make a Sweet 16 again.
Right.
It's just like it could be draw, it could be, you know, bad shooting, whatever. And as long as, you know, Underwood makes a couple small roster tweaks, I could see them, you know, making another, you know, top 20-ish run, you know, get back in the swing, take another crack at it. I think the thing that people sort of lose with him is I would not call Underwood the greatest in-game coach, but as a basic game planner, he is fantastic. He's been really good at taking the opponent's best player out of games consistently there. And, you know, he's not, it's sort of like a Pearl type quandary where Pearl, I don't feel like is great at adjusting either, but Pearl is really good at coming in with a good plan. So I don't know. And again, it's like with Villanova, all it would take is one run to sort of change how you feel about Illinois and Underwood. I mean,
it's true.
So I don't know. I like them. I like that roster. I feel like they're going to consistently be top 25 every year. And, you know, it's just like if the chips fall where they may, maybe one year they make a good run again. But I think it's hard for me to see without them getting another huge recruiting class, them being as good as they were during the COVID year with IO and everybody.
Mm. And then they ran into noted.
They ran into my favorite Plumbers Union head, Cameron Krutwig.
The Plumbers Union in Knoxville is always banging. Like, there's always like a full lot, and they're always having like it's a good group. I drive by it all the time. Like,
never seen it. I always just think of like VFWs in my head.
Okay, there you go. Imani Bates in the portal. I don't know that your secondary team will. Michigan looks like they're a strong player for him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, where do you? Where do you think he ultimately ends up? And is this a very disastrous sign for Penny Hardaway at Memphis?
I think there's plenty of other disastrous signs for Penny in Memphis. But with Imani specifically, part of me wants to consider his first season at Memphis like a mulligan year of sorts, you know? Because if you go by age, he should have been a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've personally been 17 and taken college classes, and it's like I feel behind. You don't feel as ready as you do a year or two down the line. That's obviously a lot different than basketball, but you know, human wise, I can understand why Imani struggled with the transition from sort of being considered the next Durant of, you know, some aspects to, you know, to sort of being another guy in college. So I think there's still a pathway for him to be a good player. I mean, all of the raw talent that got him recognized in the first place is still there. It didn't just magically go away. Whether he's a fit for Michigan is another debate. I would kind of rather see a guy like that honestly go to the G League. Because there, it's just like you're already playing with other NBA-level guys. I think you can frankly learn, in his specific position, I would not say this for everybody, but in his specific position, I feel like you could learn more from playing against, you know, fringy NBA guys and guys who will be in the NBA one day than you can, like, you know, Joey Hauser or that type of player, you know? So it's not for everybody, but for him, it could be best. Because I think there's...
But do you think it's ultimately pressure. What he's going to do? Like, do you... No. I don't... Yeah.
But it's lower pressure thing. The TV lights are not on you if you're playing for... What is
G League Ignite?
G League Ignite? Yeah. I don't know why I thought Santa Cruz. That's a G League team, too.
That is. But, the Warriors, yeah.
Yeah, because the Warriors kept dumping guys on there for years. But anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if he goes to Michigan, like, Juwan will probably find somewhere to fit him. But considering, like, Michigan's in the hunt for guys like Terrence Shannon from Texas Tech, Imani Bates would be a bit of a disappointment to me.
Well, we'll see ultimately what happens there. Tennessee. So Brandon Huntley Hatfield's in the portal. Chandler's gone. Like we alluded to, Murray doesn't come to Tennessee, and that seemed like somebody who was pretty likely to end up in Knoxville. It's kind of a surprise. As of right now, BJ Edwards, you might have a lot on your plate as a freshman next year. What do you make about where Tennessee's roster stands, and who do you think they should target in the portal?
I think they're going to be fine, frankly. I mean, my honest opinion is that this is a team that could easily be top 10, top 15 again next year. Because I know they lost a lot, like Kennedy Chandler, your best player, gone, sucks, but Vescovy is going to be back. Triple J will be back. I think Idu has a chance to take a huge leap year one, year two. He showed some really cool stuff late in the year. Kamwa comes back from injury. Portal wise, this is another hashtag sources thing. Yuri Collins from St. Louis, very likely to come to Tennessee. He led the nation in assists last year. Would not be surprised if he starts over Zakai at first, just because I think Tennessee really enjoys Zakai in that, you know, second unit leader role.
That just might be where he belongs.
That could be, and which is fine. It worked for JD Notte at Arkansas for a long time. I would also look for Tyreek Key from Indiana State to be a player. He's a guy who had to sit out this last year. He finally got shoulder surgery after having shoulder injuries for a couple years. But he's back healthy, averaged 18 points a game his final year at ISU. But other than that, I don't really know. I'm curious still to see, because I do not think Tennessee is really planning on Huntley Hatfield departing.
Yeah.
What they do with the big man. I know, obviously, they went after Malik Renaud, who ended up at Indiana after decommitting from Florida. And I'm not aware currently of what the backup plan for that was. I know they were sort of late getting in on that, so I'm not surprised they sort of swung and missed there. But they got to, I don't think it's necessary they get a starting level big man at first. I'm okay with the depth guy because, like I said, Kama will be back. Idu will be back. The real goal here, frankly, is to just not go into next March where it's like, hey, everybody, Uroš Plavšić is still our starting five.
Hold on. I mean, he was great down the stretch. He earned that.
But that's not good when he's earning it. That's true. Not what you want your earner to be. You wanted your earner to be, I do, frankly.
Yeah.
But I'm still, so that would be three. There's a fourth scholarship position available. I don't know what to do with that. I think they were kind of planning on one of Murray or Julian Phillips, the LSU decommit coming, and I don't know what Phillips is going to do. It doesn't seem like anybody knows what he's going to do. He's up between UT, FSU, Auburn, and the G League. So, and it seems like all four have an equal chance on any given day. So I don't know about that, but I still feel pretty good. Tennessee returns a surprising amount of quality talent. I think it's like a top 10-ish borderline roster. Going to be another year where probably the defense is a little ahead of the offense, but if they're able to, I would continue looking just for, like, you got to find a guy who can give Triple J a little bit of relief, because I think Powell more or less was supposed to be that last year, and it just didn't work. And I'm not going to give up on Powell completely. He could still work out. I mean, but I mean, 1 year of data doesn't feel so hot right there. Right. So I think you got to find a guy who can give Triple J a little bit of space, or at least allow him to play at the four or more. And you got to figure out your center rotation, because, I mean, Tennessee, until more or less the A&M game in the SEC tournament, was playing center roulette. It was whatever guy of the four was hottest on the given night.
But it was kind of like what they had to do, because, like, it was just people were struggling. Like, Barnes was searching for answers. But I think what's weird, too, is that Kumwa's injury sorted out a lot of stuff. And it sucks that it, for him, that it kind of helped Tennessee down the stretch, where I don't think we go on that run if Kumwa's still in the starting rotation. I think there was something, like, he's just a hard guy to, it's so difficult because the offense, I don't know, he has to do more than just his turnaround close to the basket, line drive shot. That's all he's got. Like, that's all he has in his bag. And when you're playing with Plavšić or somebody like that, it's just really, really hard to space the floor. And I don't know, it just seemed like the big rotation made a lot more sense when he, with just the addition by subtraction with him, unfortunately. But he's a really talented player. And now, like you said, I am so curious to see how Barnes, but I'm curious, but I'm also like, I don't want to do this again. We're going to do 3 months of Barnes going, like you said, roulette with the big position because Hatfield's gone and Fulkerson's gone, and he's got to, like, there's just going to be a lot of growing pains in figuring it out. But we have to hope that I do is the long-term answer at the five, and he gets the majority of those minutes. Like, that should be the case at this point.
And on the Kamwa front, it's kind of like, you didn't need him for the SEC tournament, but if it were possible, I wish you could have had him for the Michigan game.
Yeah.
Because that would have solved a decent bit of the Dickinson problem.
Mm.
But you can't get all, you can't always get what you want, as the Rolling Stones said.
Yeah. But if it comes down to Kumon in the Michigan game, then you had bigger problems. Like we, like
that's that... true. Literally all you had to do was hit five threes, not just two. So
that was just, it's going to bother me. That game will bother me for a while. That was as mad.
That game made me want to log off. That game. Still not over. No, I'm going to leave it off the podcast. I don't want to out this person.
Okay. We'll talk about it off air. Statsbywill.com. You can go there. If you have not already gone to statsbywill.com, go ahead and hit that bookmark. Make sure that you're keeping up with that. And you want to catch up on anything from this previous season and get ready for the Tennessee basketball offseason. What can the good folks check out from you in the coming weeks?
I'm going to take a little bit of a break from basketball analysis on the site, but I'm still writing. I'm doing some sort of essays throughout the course of the offseason on various stuff. This first one's coming next week. It is about realizing I'm old because I've started listening to baseball on the radio again.
Ooh.
I have really gotten into radio broadcasts. I have never felt more connected with the Detroit Tigers than this year. It's okay. Been nice. I've listened to all but a couple on the radio. Feels pretty good.
What are you doing while you're listening to it on the radio?
I mean, I'll go out, I'll like do yard work, or, you know, if I'm working, like, especially during work day, since I've got a day job, if I can just turn on the Tigers game in the background and listen to it that way, like, I'm still able to pay attention while getting stuff done, which is nice. Hmm. But it's also really cool to just, like, at sunset, like right now, go outside and, you know, put a baseball game on in your earbuds and just, like, look at the birds or whatever. It's very pleasant.
Look at the birds or whatever. I love it.
I feel very old.
We are absolutely in our 30s. I mean, I turned 31 on Monday, so I...
Happy belated. I'm not 30 yet, but I feel spiritually 87.
I've been called a boomer a lot by my friends here. Like, I have a lot of boomer tendencies.
I get grandpa a lot.
Yeah, but I'm here for it. Like, I love that I'm closer to 40 than I am 20. Like, I was someone who definitely aged into their personality, where it's like a lot of the stuff that I was into and just like, oh, going out, who wants to do that? I would rather read and write and do my own thing. And yeah, no, it's not really conducive when you're young. Like it's a different thing. So I'm excited for my 30s. It's good. So that's how, Will, you got to run. Thank you as always for the time, and I will talk to you next week.
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
All right, we're back. Go Big Orange Friday is back after, let me check my notes here, forever, because school has been crazy this spring, and it's been extremely hard and difficult to record of late. I had this crazy day job that I do not do anymore, so it's opened up. I can record at 5 o'clock, and I'm just full of energy. I got my Dunkin' coffee. Shout out to Dunkin' and the guys over there in Fountain City at Dunkin', because I'm not going to say who or anything, but part of... like, the way to win me over Ethan and Ryan, who are here, and I'll introduce in a second, is that I ordered a large iced coffee with my two creams and two sugars, as one does, and he said no. And I laughed. And I was like, I love that. So can I just, like, pull out? And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. You got it. And I'm like, I love, 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 love that is the response, because anything other than just like, no, why are you here? You're making my life more difficult. Like, bad customer service is exactly what I'm looking for at your restaurant, at your coffee shop, wherever it is, grocery store especially. It just completely shifted my day, where like I had to go to the dentist, and who likes going to the dentist? And it was like a whole thing. Oh, speaking of the dentist, got to control the auxiliary cord. People forget, if you make this point, you can do this. If you're like, hey, I got a lot of nerves, I'm not a big fan, and you go in, you're like, I'm going to need to get that auxiliary cord. Got it. Had Rumors played by Lil Durk and Gucci Mane very loudly. That was fun. It's been a weird, fun afternoon. I'm still caffeinated and ready to talk about Tennessee, because I'm writing about Tennessee as we speak. Ryan Shumpert, Ethan Stone, how are you guys?
Doing well. Like I said, just as you know, fighting the Wi-Fi in the McDonald's parking lot here in Fountain City, hoping it'll stay strong here, so I won't say anything else before it gives out on me.
Oh, God. Well, shout out to McDonald's, who let's just say, I feel like they've always had pretty good Wi-Fi over the years. I've definitely written in a McDonald's, especially back in Atlanta at odd hours. Not so much here in Knoxville. Ethan, how are you, sir?
I just would like to say I've also written in a McDonald's for a high school game. It's elite, you know.
It's a staple.
During the pandemic, I like to go into the McDonald's because obviously it's better there because the Wi-Fi is not as, you know, spotty or whatever. And during the pandemic, the only McDonald's that did not stay open until 11 o'clock was the one near Gibbs High School that I needed to be open until 11 o'clock. But anyway, getting back to me, I'm doing fine. I'm doing good. You know, I mean, we got a month left in my college career, so that feels nice. A little scary, but regardless, man, I'm ready to get out.
Well, I'm not there yet. I got one more semester. I could finish this summer, but I don't want to graduate this summer. I don't want to do that whole situation. I don't think that'd be fun. So I'm just going to take the summer off and wrap up in the fall and do the December graduation. But yeah, are y'all both walking next month? So that's happening. It's not at Neyland though, right? It's going to be at TBA?
Yeah, I think so at least.
TBA, yes.
Okay. Do you already have your robes and everything? Are you ready to go?
Ethan knows that I've been slacking on this.
Okay.
It is available to pick up. It is not my size. Waited too long to get one in the 6 foot size, so I might have a little bit oversized. But hey, it's a gown. It's supposed to be big. People aren't going to be able to tell.
I don't know, man. It might be difficult to walk. Like, I feel like if you go oversized, and that means it's going to kind of dangle over your feet, and you might trip over yourself. Like, that one might be more.
I'm not
can
a very
your mom hem it?
Person either.
Can you take it back to Nashville and see if they can do a hemming situation? Just take it to Litton's. I guarantee you someone can hem at Litton's at any hour. Just take it in there and you're like, I'm walking next month. Who here? And be like, hey, folks, I need you to put down the chili cheese dog for 1 second. And I need you to hook me up because I need to take care of this hemming situation because I need to graduate. And I know it's awesome being able to write your name on a chalkboard, but I need those hands to be focused on other things like hemming my gown. I think that would work.
I like that plan better because if I, you know, try to get my mom to do it, then I have to admit to her that I slacked on it and I dropped the ball and she's going to be all over me for that. So she's going to figure out on graduation day when my gown is too big, but maybe not. Maybe if I go to Litton's, then, she'll never have to know about it at all, as long as she's not listening to this podcast.
Ryan texts me like 5 days before the deadline to get the thing, and he's like, hey, have you gotten your cap and gown? And I was like, I think everybody that is graduating has gotten a cap and gown except for you.
The sad thing is I didn't even do it that day after Ethan like walked me through the steps of how to do it. I waited like another 2 or 3 days to do it. So I was big time procrastinating that.
Well, I won't lie. I mean, I'm procrastinating on one of my classes because, like, we got, like, it's one class is, like, very strict deadlines, and the other is, like, y'all have lives, just get this all in by the end of the semester, which is awful for me because that means, all right, well, sounds like a fun challenge. I'll see you in a couple months. And we're now at that point where I'm doing a lot daily now to knock that all out at once because I'm like, would I rather just do, like, 4 days of 12 hours straight in the library and just do a bunch of stuff at once or do a little bit over the course of 2 months? And I don't know, that's the way I went for one of my classes. But yeah, it's been a weird semester. It's flown by, but weird semester. Well, that's enough of catching up with Ethan, Ryan, and Chase on the campus of the University of Tennessee and our collegiate careers. But at collegiate, I guess it's academic collegiate. I don't know. We're not athletes. I feel like that's something you say about athletes. It's their collegiate careers. I want to start with the Tennessee basketball team because it's been a little bit. So we have some catching up to do where Brandon Huntley Hatfield entered the portal, which was a huge surprise, especially when you see which teams were in his like top six. And you're like, okay, outside of Louisville, this seems like a weird thing because it's going to be a downgrade generally speaking wherever he goes from here. And I mean, he was starting down the stretch, he became like a really important piece. You could tell that Barnes still saw that he was going to be a critical guy to grow with for the next couple of years, and then he's just gone. So suddenly it's like no Folky, no BHH. Kennedy Chandler entered the draft, who I'm writing about right now, and this team that we were like, oh, they figured themselves out. This is a team that knows exactly who they are now down the stretch, and they really grew as a collective unit. And you're like, I have no idea what to make of the Tennessee basketball team going into next year and where they're going. What do you make of the BHH transfer, Ethan?
I'd say if you would have asked me that in December, I would have said, duh, you know, mm-hmm. because, you know, like you say, he only started down the stretch, and he really kind of picked up his game down the stretch, really. And I guess it wasn't exactly what he expected, not exactly what Tennessee fans expected at the very beginning. But right now, I'm surprised, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't have, like I said, I've been paying attention to schoolwork a lot recently, so I have not really been in the loop. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that's not surprising. He was, like you said, starting at a good school, mm-hmm. and his list is outside of Auburn kind of, I don't know, a little iffy in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can put Louisville, maybe Georgetown, I don't know. But regardless, like, it's probably going to be a pretty big loss for Tennessee, yeah. just not necessarily because of the talent he presents right now, but the talent he can present in a couple years. If you give him a couple years for Barnes just to mold him, give him, you know, maybe the Grant Williams treatment, just who knows? What Tennessee fans lose is just the, I guess, potential that Brandon Huntley Hatfield could have, I guess, given Tennessee basketball in the future. And it's always nice to have a big body like that. I mean, mm-hmm. former five-star recruit, you got 6'10 athlete that was really starting to come into form late in the season. Not amazing by any means, but definitely starting to come into form. And I think I'll just double down on that Tennessee's losing a lot of potential in Brandon Huntley Hatfield.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a never-ending saga during the season of, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? And for him to, you know, had gone through the coaches' meetings at the end of the year, and it seemed like you avoided that. He didn't leave after that. It felt like, okay, we finally have an answer. He's going to come back.
Right.
And then he kind of pulls the plug and decides to go. And, you know, I think he wanted some playing time things promised to him that Tennessee wasn't willing to do. And I think that's a big part of it. And Ethan hit the nail on the head with it's the potential that you lose. And we started to see those flashes towards the end of the year. But at the same time, I'll kind of play the devil's advocate to that. I'm not sure he's going to be anywhere for two or three more years. I mean, I think he has his eyes on the NBA, and I think he's a guy that probably before he's even ready to go to the NBA, once he's got that opportunity and, you know, has a chance to get drafted, I think he'll go. So from a potential standpoint, you lose a lot. But at the same time, I feel – pretty good about the bodies that Tennessee is bringing back in the front court. I think you need to maybe find some scoring, because he was the guy that you pointed to. He's the one that's going to grow into the scoring.
Right.
I love Adu as a prospect, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to give you 15 points a game down low. So I think in the transfer portal, maybe in high school ranks with Julian Phillips, you're looking for a guy that's more of a natural scorer. But overall, while I think the Huntley Hatfield transfer hurts from a what could have been, I don't think it's necessarily anything to blame on Tennessee's end, and I think it's something Tennessee's going to be able to address and really be fine and not be a debilitating loss by any means.
Who do you think is the biggest transfer target that they go after?
Murray, at least in the early part of the cycle, who goes to Georgetown over Tennessee. I mean, he just seemed like, from one, the fact that he just played 1 year, so you have 3 years of eligibility left. Again, most of these guys probably aren't going to play till they're a senior. But what he can do on the defensive end and how committed and locked in he was as a freshman, like, that screams Rick Barnes. But obviously Tennessee, he goes to Georgetown, Tennessee doesn't get him. Uri Collins seems to be the hot name right now, and to me that makes a ton of sense, because Tennessee needs to bring in another point guard to go along with Sakai Ziegler. If not, you're just putting an unbelievable amount of pressure on B.J. Edwards to come in and not only play a lot as a freshman, but play a point guard a lot as a freshman. And they need to add someone besides Ziegler, like they had Chandler last year. And Collins seems like a perfect fit from what he can do as a passer, pretty good three-point shooter to space the floor the way Tennessee did last year. And like I said, his passing and his experience in the college game, I think it's easy to see how that could be a natural fit coming into Tennessee and helping right away if Tennessee is able to land him.
I'm excited. And with Murray, look, anytime you have the opportunity to go play at a program that did not win a conference game deep into the 2021-2022 season, you got to do it. Like, whenever you see a ship sinking, what is my instinct? Jump on that sinking ship. Like, that's what you want to do. Like, that's the nature of the beast. So I totally get where he was coming from there. Let's pivot to Tennessee football, because I thought this was pretty interesting. There's a good write-up by Rick Butler on Rocky Top Insider this week about what Kiffin said on the Rich Eisen show this week. I kind of wrote about that today with Saban and Lane, and I was like, when I heard what Lane said on the show, I went back and I was like, okay, let me compare that to what Saban's been saying the last few months, because I think what's interesting about those two, and not just because of their history, OC and Kiffin's time there, but like, Kiffin is college coaches, and I wrote about this today that you can read at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com, but like, something that I keep going back to when I read these quotes, it's like, they make sense. Like, yes, these coaches are well compensated, and yes, this is part of the job. It's like, if you want to make a lot of money and you want this sport to be a lot of money, then guess what? It's going to be more complicated, more stressful. There's more things that you have to put up with on a day-to-day basis, but it is increasingly more stressful. And people like, oh, Twitter's just a terrible place for this kind of discourse, because they'll just see the cut up where it's like, Tennessee fans saw a little bit of what Kiffin said about East Tennessee and that kid in East Tennessee, alluding to Nico. All right, ready for this? Nico Iamaleava. Iamaleava. That's it. Iamaleava. It's one you have to say extremely slow. There's no way you're ever going to be able to say this fast. But yeah, so his name, of course, is just going to continue to get thrown around when it comes to Tennessee football for the foreseeable future. But the rest of his quote made sense. So if you just pull out the rest of what he's saying, where it's like, Bryce Young should jump into the portal every year because we've created this system where it's like, he should go be a free agent year over year, even though he just won a national title, because it's like, he increases his value year to year. And it's like, what are we doing? Where it's like, it makes more sense for these guys to maximize their money and do all that. And I don't know. I thought the majority of what Kiffin said was fair. And then it's like, also, he just can't help himself, where he jumps in with the East Tennessee kid. And you're like, he knows what he's doing. And it was like one of those things when people jumped on what happened with Tennessee and Ole Miss, and we don't have to relitigate what happened there. But like, there is something too where it's like, Kiffin, if he just dropped that part of it, it's almost exactly what Saban's been saying for months. We're like, they're on the same page. Kiffin, Saban, even Mike Leach, they're all like, Saban's the most thoughtful, and he's not going to take those rogue shots. But then you had Heupel on a podcast this week talking about the Ole Miss faking of injuries and stuff, and then the controversial call with Barron that was a strip fumble that was a touchdown, and that was just one of the more insane things that's ever happened in a football game that will just stick with me for a really long time. But I don't know. I think it's super interesting that Kiffin and Heupel are going back and forth, and that they cannot kind of... There's a rivalry there now. Like, they are really going back and forth, and as long as Kiffin's at Ole Miss and Heupel's at Tennessee, I think this is a thing. But I don't know. I found all their comments this week pretty interesting. What did you make of them, Ethan?
Yeah, it's the same. Tennessee and Ole Miss aren't going to play in the foreseeable future. That's the first thing I take from what you said. But I mean, going back on the Iamaleava.
See, there you go. You got it. You started too fast. Up. Yeah, you got to go slow.
Iamaleava. There we go. It's a nice name.
No, it's hold on.
Iamaleava.
Iamaleava.
It's a Iamaleava.
It's okay. Iamaleava. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Right, Ryan? Am I doing this wrong?
That's how I pronounce it. But I have been so far from knowing how to pronounce it, I usually just call him Nico, unless I'm in a super formal situation where I have to attempt the last name.
Yeah.
Ryan's the smart one here, right?
Well, Nico, no, it's like one of those things. I just, there's some name, like, it doesn't really matter. Like Ryan said, we're all going to call him Nico no matter what. It's just like the Tua thing where no one was saying Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah. Like, it was just Tua, and it was Tua time. Like, no one ever said that. But it's also, oh, I forgot to mention the other part of what he said was that when it came to Lane, was the locker room dynamics. Is we're going to have to deal with that. Taven's in camp right now. He enrolled early. Taven came in, 4-star guy. He's been the leader of this past recruiting class. He was a big get at the time, and he's just kind of like, it's Nico, 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 but it's like, it's not fair to guys like Taven or what this locker room dynamic is going to be like, because if Nico is that guy from the Athletic article, like, what does that do to locker rooms where it's like guys who come in who already have the money, who haven't done anything yet? It's like, what does that do? And like, Kiffin, that's a fair point. Like, I'm glad I'm not in charge of this. I'm glad I'm not having to worry about this. But the other part of me is that I think that's more of a generational gap where I don't think kids who are Nico's age are going to see it that way, where they're going to be like, oh, this guy, who does he think he is coming in here with? They're going to be like, no, I get it. He got the bag. He's a five-star kid, like, has that, whatever, if it is him or any other NIL kid who comes in right out of the gate with good lucrative deals with a collective or whoever it is. I don't think kids are going to look at it that way. So I think, Lane, I would probably push back in terms of, like, I don't think other kids who grow up in the NIL era are going to have this perspective. I think they're going to be like, yeah, this guy's he got his money fast, but, like, I would like to be in that position. Like, I'm not going to be against a dude doing what I would have done if I was in his shoes. I don't think that that's actually going to be much of an issue. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think you're right. And part of it is because, you know, it'll be different his freshman year, but a lot of these guys are going to come in and be aware of, you know, the $8 million athletic article and all that stuff. So I think with all of it with NIL, just don't know. And it's going to be finding things out as we go. And while I think Kiffin and I think Saban, and I think all these guys who have criticized the lack of legislation of NIL are correct, I don't think, you know, I haven't heard any of them propose any legislation that's going to fix all these problems. I mean, it's just really complicated and it's a really difficult issue because at the end of the day, these kids deserve the opportunity to make money. Out of way. That cat is out of the bag. You're not going back on that. And while there is need to legislate some things, it's hard to legislate. And I, again, like I said, I don't hear a lot of people coming up with great ideas for how to do this. So it is an issue. I think it's something that coaches, media, players, collective companies, universities are all kind of learning as they go. And it's going to be interesting, fascinating, I would say, in 3 to 5 years to look back and see how, you know, Nico's situation and a lot of situations at a bunch of different schools unfold.
And to be clear, we do not know if it is Nico. We cannot emphasize this enough, is we do not know. Everyone just throwing out there, Lane just saying the East Tennessee kid was wild to me. Like, the fact that he threw it out there is pretty wild because people have been really careful about how to go about this. And he's just like that East Tennessee kid. And it's like, all right, Lane, if you want to go down that road, I mean, that it is what it is. What were you going to say, Ethan?
I was just going to say, that's what Ryan said is exactly what I was going to say, that I took from the end of the original article by Rick Butler, I took his last line as probably the most important part. There's just going to be growing pains in this. Like, it's a new world that everyone's walking into right now that no one really understands. And like Ryan said, no one has any better ideas. Like, you made the rules and we're walking into them. You're going to have to follow them. It's just kind of how it works right now. And obviously no one knows if Nico is going to be, you know, a Bryce Young, is going to be an excellent quarterback. He certainly has the intangibles to be an excellent quarterback at the University of Tennessee, but he's making $8 million if it's him. He's making $8 million whether he starts, whether he sucks, whether he tears his ACL, I mean, whether anything happens, really. So it's just kind of like Ryan said, a wait and see sort of thing. Just a look into how college athletics is changing, I guess, going forward from I guess, when everything was made official with the NIL stuff.
I think the NIL is a lot more. I'm not even close to being as worried about NIL as I am transfer portal. I think the transfer portal is far more of a detriment to the health and the growth of college football, just because I thought about this in another podcast, but like, fans, like, we know, like, we have to do this for a job. Like, we have to be aware of who's where, who's on the roster right now, who's coming in and out. Like, the vast majority of Tennessee fans probably have no idea who Isaiah Nayer is, and that he was almost a Tennessee Vol and now is a Texas Longhorn, and just what's going on there. And we'll get into a certain wideout from USC and if he's going to make into the fold, or Robinson from UCF, and we'll get into that in a second. But like, the portal, like, the easiest fix to, I think, stop a lot of the bleeding in college football is to have a portal window. I don't think that's that complicated, as I think you can legislate that as a variety of universities come together and be like, you can go in at this time and you can go in at this time, and that's it. Like, just have where it's like, you are allowed to leave at these points in the season or like in the academic calendar, and that's it. Like, you cannot have this open, like, October 3rd, Harrison Bailey dips or Teon Evans just disappears, and then you're like, wait, what? What is happening? Like, this guy was an important cog in the first half. Like, that hurts fan support. Like, that hurts fan engagement, where they're like, wait, I don't even know if we have a guy week to week anymore because of the portal. They can just put their name in the middle of the year and just depart that way. Like, that is something that's way more, like, NIL is just above board what's already been happening forever. Like, that doesn't really, I think, move the needle all that much. I'm more concerned about the portal and people bouncing around and fans not ever being certain where certain players are. And you can be for the portal, but also just that, like, it cannot be a year-round thing where, like, a day-to-day, like, who's in the portal today? Who's where? Like, Emory Jones still sitting out there, and we just... That is something I think they have to work on faster than anything else. It's like, establish a portal window. Like, I don't think that's that complicated. Do y'all?
No, I mean, you already have it in basketball where right. by the end of this month, you have to enter the portal if you're going to enter. And the SEC already has some parameters.
Yeah, you can't go in conference or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I know when Mims entered the portal last week, and he's obviously come back to Georgia, like, he couldn't transfer to another SEC school. So I do not think it's that complicated. I mean, it seems like you already have certain versions of it at certain levels, and you would feel like there could be a national implementation of it that wouldn't be that difficult.
In terms of the portal for Tennessee, do we think Jalen Robinson out of UCF or McCoy kid from USC, who do you, like, I don't... It's interesting. It's just hard to forecast where things are going here. But if, based on what you've seen from both and what we know from both, do you think Tennessee, because the fact they're adding somebody else, like, this is a really young wide receiver room and they're linked to too many guys, where the fact that they were all in on Isaiah Nair, like, they want another veteran body with Tillman and company and Hyatt. Like, they like their young guys, but they're all young. And I think Heupel might be one of those where I think he's going to trust veterans over playing a lot of true freshmen and young guys during his time in Knoxville. So I'm curious, but who do you think makes more sense, and who do you think ultimately is the guy that joins the fray this summer?
I think it's Jalen.
You think it's Jalen?
Yeah, I think it's Jalen Robinson personally. Sorry, okay. We've all started at the same time.
I always have to, like, on a 3-person bot, I need to always be like, all right, this is going to this person. Yeah.
Well, Ryan's feed is also late, so I feel like he probably started before I did, but it's. I'll just keep going. I'm going to say Jalen Robinson just because I feel like, I mean, if we're talking about people that make more sense for Tennessee to get and people that would make more sense in Tennessee's offense as far as success goes, I don't think it's a question. I think it's Robinson because obviously McCoy has sat out for a while. He didn't play in 2021. Jalen Robinson also played kind of limited in 2021, but he had an excellent 2020 season under Josh Heupel. He's played in the system, or at least something that's similar to the system. And, you know, regardless of his knee injury, I feel like he's the better fit for Tennessee. Now, if either of them are going to come here, I don't know. I have no idea. I know Brew McCoy visited at the end of March, but I mean, the simple fact is Brew McCoy, you know, commits to Texas, moves, goes to USC, and gets like 2 touchdowns off 20 receptions there, and then, you know, doesn't play in 2021. It's been a while since he's played the game. So, I mean, I feel like it's of the two, Robinson just sticks out to me. Do I have any insider access? Do I know if either of them are favored over the other? I have no idea, but it just makes sense that obviously Robinson has played under Heupel. He has the knowledge of his system. It just makes more sense to me.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I'll even add on that, you know, Robinson, it was been with Heupel. Heupel's going to know him well. He's going to know his personality, and obviously I don't know it. But and Brew McCoy, Ethan mentioned the bouncing around legal issues at USC. It does not seem, you know, he got cleared by the police department and all that. They're not going to press charges, but it doesn't seem like USC is taking it back on the football team. And to me personally, that says a lot, because I know USC wants to win just as bad as all these other good college football programs do. So from that instinct, and so much Heupel talks about family and doing things the right way within the program, to me that makes a lot of sense. The only thing I go the other way with is Robinson, primarily a slot receiver. I feel like Tennessee has a lot more solid bodies that they feel good about at the slot. Now, Jalen Hyatt's worked outside. They have some guys that have worked outside, but that are in general best in the slot, and it kind of feels like they need to add an outside body more than an inside body, and that's where McCoy would fit more than Robinson. But again, no inside information, like Ethan said, but Robinson, I think, between the connections, between his more proven success on the field and kind of with some of McCoy's off-the-field issues, to me that would make more sense. But I wouldn't even rule out past Tennessee getting two receivers in the portal. They're going to have spots, and like you said, Chase, at the start, they have been very active in pursuing receivers really all offseason.
Yeah, and I guess there's not really going to be a drop-off from Burns to Pope. Staying in-house at the wide receiver spot, and obviously I think a lot of these guys had relationships with both before Burns left, so I think that's good, because I was concerned, especially with Casper and Carnell Tate both being in the fold here. It's like, oh, the worst possible time for Cody Burns to dip is when Nico commits and he's recruiting hard, these two five-star and a four-star, and Casper obviously goes to Oregon, but Carnell Tate, I think last I looked, is still leaning Vols. Vols right now, number 7 in recruiting per On3. I think they're like 8 or 9 on 247. Either way, they're top 10. They're cleaning up in-house and in the state. And that was something that Heupel talked about last year, right? Is that he wanted to lock down the borders again. And something that I thought was interesting was like, okay, that's cool. That's like a good culture thing. And I wrote about this yesterday where like, that's like a good culture thing. I don't think that moves the needle at all, but it's just nice to say that like we've locked it down. I think now that with this 2023 class, I think Tennessee has 4 of the top 20 kids in the state of Tennessee committed, with Robinson and company. But I am, and Caleb Herring, who we'll get to in just a second. But I am curious to see how much higher they can go, because Nico's locked in. They've got a lot. Herring's locked in. Herring's obviously the number one player in the state this year, but I don't think he's the same as Walter Nolan was in 2021. Might be a little bit of a difference, but a big get nonetheless for the Vols and what he'll do on the edge for Tennessee. And they could use all the edge talent they can get based on what we saw last year. Just bodies. They just need bodies. Like, that's something. It's not even just like the guys that we had, like Barron and Young, I think are going to be really good players. It's just they need more guys, and they need more depth. And I'm excited to see what Herring does there. But I am curious to see how high they can get to in 2023. Like, if you add Tate, and then the biggest wild card of all is Nico going after it with the other IMG kid, the 6'5", 300-pound offensive tackle, because if we get him, if you add him and Carnell Tate, does that put this class, like, that's top three, right? There's no way they're not in the top three at the end of the day if they land both of those, right? Am I wrong, Ryan?
Do you mean in the sense of, like, when they commit in June, they'd be top three?
Yes. I think you're in the top three at that point.
I would think so, too. I would think so, too. That you would, if that happened in the summer, that you would be very, very high.
And then you're, like, at a point where you can't really fall that far. I think at this point, I think we can feel okay that we're going to finish somewhere in the top 10. I think Tennessee's 2023 class is going to fall somewhere in it. Unless Nico does not pull off one more big recruiting pitch, which I just don't think is happening. I think he's going to bring in somebody else. Somebody else is going to want to play with Nico. It's just the way kids talk and the way this is going these days, I think it's going to be a package deal with at least one other five-star. So I don't know who it is, if it's the offensive tackle or it's Carnell Tate, but I don't know. I'm leaning Tate, because I think, just reading between the tea leaves, if Casper picked Tennessee, then I think Tate's out and he's probably Ohio State bound. But because Casper chose Oregon, I don't know. It seems like those two are connected, that Tate is leaning Tennessee, and then not too long after Casper commits to Oregon. So it's a really good spot to be in, because I did not think we would be here this quickly based on where we were this time last year. And now one of the biggest questions we had about Heupel was not the scheme and the offense and what he was going to do on the field. It was recruiting. And if this is where we're going to be recruiting-wise, and we're going to do this, and Alex Golish, who's moved into the top 5 in 247 recruiter rankings, then suddenly the ceiling's raised. The ceiling has raised in Knoxville. And that's what I've been saying on other pods, is just that, like, Tennessee showed it on the field this past year, but now we know there is another gear Heupel can get to, and there is more reason for optimism as to what Tennessee can be and where they could be in the East. They're not challenging Georgia yet, but this is the next brick that you have to do to really challenge Georgia year in, year out. And Florida's behind now. Florida's rebuilding. It's going to take a couple years for them to get back. South Carolina, not nervous. Kentucky, not nervous. But I'm just excited. I think it's a good thing. What do you, Ethan, what do you think the Vols are getting in Caleb Herring? What excites you most about him?
I'm happy you talked about Herring with that, because I was going to say Nico, obviously, and I'm going to get to Herring in a second. Nico obviously raises the ceiling, you know. When you get that prospect, when you get that guy to commit, and he starts saying he's going to bring other people, that right there, I mean, that's a turning point. I feel like Caleb Herring on a smaller scale is kind of similar in that regard. Now, I've seen a lot of things on Twitter. Don't know if it's true. Who knows? That pairing has kind of had that similar pull that Nico's having, and that he's wanting to bring players to come with him. And why not both? Why not say that Caleb Herring and Nico are both saying, hey, come play with us. We're this amazing quarterback and the number one player in the state of Tennessee. Mm. And, I mean, what are they getting from Herring? Number one is, like I just said, number one player in the state of Tennessee. You've got another recruiter, possibly. You've got an elite talent on the edge. Now, I don't know too much about him. I know that Elijah Herring, obviously, his younger brother committed, or older brother committed to Tennessee just a little bit ago. But it's just, it's nice Tennessee is getting those top prospects from, I mean, you said Georgia. Caleb Herring had an offer from Georgia. Yep. He had an offer from Auburn. He had an offer from, I don't know, we could go down the list as much as we want.
But he didn't have to stay in state and go to Tennessee.
Yeah, exactly. For Tennessee to be taking these guys from, you know, these top prospects, these legitimate talents, not just three-star guys at a bulk, that's saying something about Heupel. It's saying that maybe Josh Heupel, the reason he wasn't recruiting well is because he's recruiting over Florida and Florida State in the state. That's, you know, sometimes it's as simple as that. And yeah, you know, we can say as much as we want about that, but I'd say right now that Heupel has gotten off to a pretty hot start in the recruiting trail.
For sure, for sure. What do you think, Ryan? Do you think this is, like, do you think some more building blocks are coming? Do you think Caleb and Nico, like Ethan saying, lead to a couple more big names? I don't think we're done. I think, and I mean, it's silly to think we're done in April when we still got several months ahead, but unlike a lot of other programs, Tennessee's just adding a lot of people early. So when I was going through the amount of commits, it's like we've got a lot already locked in. So like Tennessee might be done pretty soon. Like we might wrap this up with a lot of our big names pretty early on it. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think there's going to be more guys they add, more blue chips. And like you said, there was so much last year of was throwing the class together in November and December just because you had such little momentum around the program when Heupel got there. And in April and June, which seemed like two huge commitment months, Tennessee just didn't have much to sell. So they were going to have to take guys that they didn't want to take, and that led to them doing a lot more recruiting late. And one thing that stands out to me, and one thing that I go back to that 2022 in-state recruiting cycle where Tennessee was not able to lock down the borders, and what was one of the best, at least by the rankings, one of the best talent hauls in the state of Tennessee ever, is that Tennessee, if you're losing Ty Simpson to Alabama, that's one thing. If you're losing Jordan James to Georgia, and he ends up at Oregon, but again, that's one thing. Georgia and Alabama recruiting at a level that's pretty unmatched. But you Isaiah Horton to Miami. You can't miss out on Dwayne Twins to Kentucky. You can't be missing out on these guys going to comparable schools to you. And I think that's where, you know, Nathan Robinson, the guy that easily flies under the radar, just a high three-star recruit from out in West Tennessee, but a guy Tennessee has been extremely high on for a long time and has been a priority really since Heupel got to Tennessee. And Tennessee, they don't beat out Alabama for him, but they beat out Kentucky and Ole Miss. And those are two programs that, frankly, right now where Tennessee's program at, that's where they're recruit. Those are their recruiting rivals. And I think when you have a lead-in with Herring, and obviously his brother's there, and he's not far away from UT, just in Murfreesboro. It's those sorts of extra relationships you have when you can get in and beat out a Georgia that I think is – it's kind of where Tennessee's program's at right now, where you're not necessarily going to – you can't kick yourself for losing a kid to Alabama or Georgia, but when you do have a tie to an elite prospect like that, you got to beat out Georgia for those kids. And I think you got to a lesser degree, the lower four stars, the high three stars – the kids that don't have the Georgia and Alabama offers, you have to be able to beat out the Auburns. The South Carolina is going to be another one. I'm sure Tennessee will go up against a lot in recruiting with Beamer there. You got to beat out those types of schools if you want to elevate yourselves over them and then eventually get yourself into the ability that you can play with the Georgias and Alabamas. But I say that, and the great equalizer in football and even more so in college football is the quarterback position. And we know Josh Heupel is going to be good at that, and you got to top five recruit in the country coming in to play that position. So if you're just good, Georgia and Alabama can be better than you talent across the board at every other position, and they're going to be because they recruit at an unprecedented level. That quarterback position can equalize a lot of things, and if you can get yourself elevate yourself to that next level of talent everywhere else across the board, I think you give yourself a chance.
The chaos situation, I think, is like if Hooker gets hurt, he gets banged up, and Milton's awful, and then they have to go to Taven as a true freshman, and then Taven just balls out and like is just looks like a superstar early on. You're like, oh god, Nico's not even on campus yet. Wait, this looks like a 3 to 4 year starter right here. This is like he's just Josh Dobbs all over again, if that's what Taven Jackson is, you're like, uh-oh. Do we go with the, it's like a Jake Fromm, Justin Fields situation in Knoxville is something that, I mean, it's a possibility. Like, I would just encourage people to not write off Taven yet. Like, that is still something. I would not be surprised if he gets a real shot. And I don't know. He's on campus. He's working. And he made it through the spring, unlike another highly touted quarterback from this past year. So, hey, the... It's the little things, in progress. And that's a bit for the local Knoxvillians who will get that reference. We'll end on baseball. Did y'all see Tony Vitello on campus yesterday?
Just on Snapchat.
Okay.
I was not near the library yesterday. I don't spend as much time around there as I probably should.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard about your gown situation, Ethan. What about you? Did you see Vitello around campus at all yesterday?
Yeah, I also did not see. My girlfriend actually sent me a thing, you know, about Heupel. That's where, not Heupel, about Vitello. That's where I saw it first.
Okay.
Sent me that thing that's making rounds on social media. And it's just, you know, I feel like it perfectly encapsulates who Tony Vitello is as a person. So
he's delightful. This is just a great situation all across the board with Tennessee athletics. Like Kelly Harper, him. You got Vitello, Harper, Barnes, Heupel, just a lot of fun all across. They're all extremely different. Like, that's something that's extremely interesting, too, is just how different all of them are. But I don't know. Tennessee baseball, like, they've been number one. I've been concerned about us doing another pod because baseball really took off during our school break on this front. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they can keep it going. But it's been so much fun. I've been to a lot of these games and seeing the middle of this lineup with Lipscomb, with Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert. Gilbert's just, you just take it for granted where I just look at him like, what is he batting this week? Is it still close to 500 2 months into the season? Like, it's insane what Drew Gilbert's doing. And I mean, it's been a great season, and they're going to, fingers crossed, it looks like they're back to the College World Series. Like, it would be huge upset if they did not. We got the trash talk back with Arkansas because the two programs, I think, Ryan, you wrote about this at Rocky Top Insider, that these two teams are on a collision course because, like, the rest of the SEC is just not where Arkansas and Tennessee are at this moment. And Arkansas is already penciling in Tennessee in the tournament, and they're excited for that. Like, I'm sure it's going to be a normal game between the Volunteers and the Hogs when they get matched up if that time comes. But you get Florida on the road this weekend. They get back after losing. their first loss, of course, was the Smokies game. And then everyone was just that, like, oh, wooden bats, all this talk. And then just the dumbest. I had Georgia fans sending me all kinds of stuff about this. And it's sad because Tennessee, being an everything school, we are able to appreciate all sports all year round, where it's just like, it's good baseball. We don't have to pay attention as close to what football recruiting, and Georgia fans are like, they're diagnosing the spring day and just being like, oh, look at our new edge guy. Carson Beck looks great. Like, this is fun. Like, this is a good thing. Because they're not paying attention to baseball. They're not paying attention to everything else. The basketball program, did they play this year? I don't know. Like, I don't remember much from the UGA basketball team this year. So they take a long extended hibernation away from all of this. But all that to say, Tennessee is, like, that whole situation was insane, but they've gotten back, won again this week. Seems like everything's fine, but Vitello chest bumps an umpire, gets a 4-game suspension. He will be eligible to come back on Sunday for the finale. Do we ever get, like, a clear understanding, Ryan, as to what started the Anderson back and forth and then why Vitello came out after, and what actually happened there?
Or at least Tennessee believes Alabama was relaying pitches, which obviously isn't illegal, and Tennessee just needs to do a better job of not tipping it off. But I think Tennessee was looking out for that after Friday night's game. I think they had a strong inkling. And actually, Anderson was up the second at bat of the game before they didn't hit Dolander with that liner, was up barking something at the Alabama dugout. So I think he was kind of already on edge. And then for one of his pitchers to get hit like that, he was going out and barking at Alabama and the umpires too. And I think Vitello was kind of trying to play middleman of, let's back up Anderson a little bit, let's check on Dolander. And then obviously when Anderson got ejected, it was Jeffrey Macias who was the home plate umpire on Friday night, and Tennessee was not happy with him. He was the same home plate umpire from the game in Texas in Omaha last year. So past relationship there, Anderson was not talking to Macias. Macias ejects Anderson, and I think that was just a fuse to really set off Vitello. He's not a fan of Jeffrey Macias, and we got to see that firsthand after Anderson's ejection.
Yeah, absolutely. Ethan, what are you looking for in the series this weekend against Florida?
Some consistency. I actually said after the I texted one of our editors after Tennessee wins 12th in a row, 12th SEC game in a row, and they're facing Tennessee Tech. I did not expect the wood bats would be a problem for Tennessee. And I text our editor, I say, Tennessee might need to be humbled just a little bit. I think they might have gotten the message, maybe. You know, they lose two in a row, obviously, that one to Tennessee Tech. You can write it off as a fluke if you want to. Alabama is a really good team. I believe they were the number 24 team in the country when you know, they come to Knoxville. Give them a good series, give Tennessee a good series. And obviously Florida is a good team as well. And this is going to be an away series, so Tennessee's going to have to walk outside the confines of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And I guess, you know, just keep doing what they're doing. It's really a matter of not getting too hot and letting these emotions just kind of fuel you the entire way, because at some point, like Tennessee fans saw during the Tennessee Tech game, like game one against Alabama, the bats just aren't going to show up. Sometimes that's just the reality of what Tennessee is going to have to deal with. Baseball is a weird game like that. Sometimes you're not going to get the offense, and you're just going to have to ride in other ways. You're going to have to use pitching. You're going to have to use, you know, fill in whatever you want to there. But that's really just what you have to look for, is just kind of keep chugging, keep putting on more steam, I guess, in that aspect.
Yeah. Ryan, who has been your most impressive player of late?
I think as of late, it's Jarrell Ortega. I mean, he 8-12 last weekend, and to me, I think one of the, I don't even know if you can call it a weakness in Tennessee's lineup, but they really haven't hammered out that two spot yet. Who's going to be the guy there? Ortega had been the guy against lefties, against righties. They've used a bunch of different guys, and he got the start in that two spot on Saturday against a right-handed pitcher, ran with it. And to me, he just seems like he's getting a lot more comfortable as he gets more and more reps. He had some defensive issues earlier in the year that has not been a problem really the last few weeks. And like I just said, that bat's really been heating up.
Yeah, he's been a good one. Moore has been a surprise. Like, he's been great. I'm excited to see what he looks like in the future. Luke's kind of like the heart and soul this year, where he's just a troll, and it's fantastic. Like, he just, I mean, everyone points to, for lack of a better term, points to what he did at home plate not too long ago. But I just love that this team embraces the villain aspect, and they know who they are, and it's just fun. Like, I tell the sportsman and gentleman and her dad, it's just like, and all my uncles and everybody else, like, don't take this for granted. This is insane. What's happening this year is not going to be the norm. Like, as awesome as Vitello is and as great as this program is right now, just the start and the SEC play and where we are in the middle of our lineup and just the group that they have right now is just rare. It's so rare, and it's fun. But for the local folks, if you have not already done so, make sure you go out to these games. It's insane. Like, it was packed out. So it was standing room only last week when I was there. And it, I don't know. It's a fun time to be a Tennessee Volunteer all across the board. Ryan, what can the good folks check out from you at Rocky Top Insider this week?
Yeah, so like you mentioned earlier, had to write up on Tony V raising some money for Wounded Warrior Project. Had another piece today kind of talking about what is his life like when he's suspended in these games. And he had a quote today that wasn't even related to that. It's like, the number one thing I like is competing, and the number two thing I like is baseball. So, I mean, competing is just in that guy's DNA, and I know it's killing him to be able to
Uh-oh. Ethan, did we lose Ryan at the very end?
Did he finally go out?
He finally went out at the very end. Ryan, it sounds great. Oh, there he goes. And that's it for Ryan. Ethan, what can the good folks check out from you at the UTK Daily Beacon?
I'll finish up what Ryan was going to say. The Daily Beacon will have, obviously, full coverage of Tennessee's weekend against Florida. That'll be from Andrew Peters, one of our staff writers, and then Josh Lane, our sports editor, obviously. Have full coverage of the tennis tournaments going on this weekend. I know we'll have more information about, you know, recruiting, be it basketball, be it football, maybe something on Tyreek Key, you know, in the basketball world, and just all sorts of names, Yuri Collins, just whoever you want to. We're we'll keep you in touch with that as it moves forward.
There you go. There you go. Ethan, good luck with your Jazz tonight as you try and steal a series without Luka Doncic. So
yeah,
whatever you got to do. Whatever you got to do to advance.
I can't say I have much faith in my beloved Jazz, but I'll be rooting for him regardless.
Rough situation for the NBA with Luka, yeah. Chris Middleton, and Devin Booker all now missing time. It's just it's bad. Bad look.
I wish Luka was playing. I'll be honest. I want him to be playing. I want the Jazz to face the Mavs at full strength, and because when they inevitably do beat the Mavericks here in six games, like they probably will if Luka doesn't play tonight, they're going to run to the Suns, probably lose by four, and then people are going to call the Jazz frauds because they barely beat the Mavericks without Luka or whatever. But you can say whatever you want to about that. It's just kind of how it works. That's the reality that the Jazz were handed.
There you go. Yeah. Ethan Stone, Ryan Shumpert, wherever he may be at this point in time, hopefully safe. Great to have you back on the pod, and I will talk to you guys next week.
All right. See ya.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. A lot of Vols on this particular episode of the podcast, but who doesn't love that? Because as people sometimes all the time forget, it isn't everything school, and there's all kinds of stuff to cover here in Knoxville on Rocky Top. But thank you again to Stats by Will and Ryan Shumpert and Ethan Stone for coming on this edition of the podcast, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it and you have not already done so, go ahead and share it out. Tell a friend, family member, coworker, whoever, about the Chase Thomas Podcast here on the Blue Wire Pod Network, and why you like the show and why they might want to listen too. Don't forget, you can also read my work. Go ahead and do that today if you prefer to read it. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. New pieces every day. Two new ones up on the site right now. So go ahead and check those out. If you've not already done so, type in your email so you will never miss a future article from me on that front. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Type in your email. That simple. Also, you can watch us on YouTube. YouTube.com. Type in the Chase Thomas Podcast. That easy. That simple. If you would prefer to watch all of these episodes of the program, you can do so. YouTube.com, the Chase Thomas Podcast. All kinds of ways to contribute to the show, to get involved, to keep up with all my work. You can always email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Any questions, concerns, mailbag stuff, all that and more, chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. That's it for today. I am traveling over the weekend. I'll be back in Atlanta and for tough reasons for my grandfather's funeral that will be held on Saturday, but it's gonna be hard, and it's a tough weekend ahead, so no more pods until Monday, so weekend free for you guys to catch up on the five episodes that I have out this week. But hope you guys enjoy that and understand, but I'll be back in the normal routine come Monday, and new content to look out for Monday morning. So I also should mention that if you've noticed, these episodes are now going out at 3 a.m. Eastern time every single day. So every episode going forward will be out at that time. So for your morning commute and anything like that, the Chase Thomas Podcast will be right there for you guys to kick off your day. So yeah, new episodes will be out every morning at that time. So look out for that in your podcast player preference. But thank you guys, as always, for tuning into this very program and supporting the Chase Thomas Podcast here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. I greatly appreciate it. And yeah, new episode coming in a couple days. You guys be safe. Go Vols. Beat the Gators this weekend. Hawks tonight. All kinds of sports. Sports! Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.